Log Talk Radio.
Jeremiah. Hello?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, Jeremiah.
Okay.
All right.
Well, good evening and welcome to the man's voice here. Panelists seem to be enforced to a great extent, except one of the panelist members changed his area code, kind of threw me off there. But he's here. Jeremiah's here. That's a good thing. So, guys, the world is just full of five or six different things. I mean, we've talked about a lot of things, but we're seeming to be talking about the same things, but then the world is stuck on the same things. I mean, there's only COVID for one. There's, of course, Biden and the politics and the border. But I thought, you know, we'd bounce it up a little around and talk about other things. But I wanted to talk about, first of all, something that's going to be on a lot of parents' minds, especially our fathers. So let's talk about the CDC, because they issued some guidelines on Halloween trick-or-treating this year due to COVID-19. So they're saying that it's high risk for kids to be out trick-or-treating this Halloween, for door-to-door trick-or-treating, and especially for a lot of those churches do trunk-or-treating up in the north. I know that all the cars park in the parking lot, open their trunks, and the kids walk by and they give them candy. They're saying that's high risk also. So I think for men who are wondering, those that listen to our show, let's talk about a little bit about our families and, you know, all the different things, because there's Thanksgiving coming up, there's Christmas coming up. If this virus doesn't change at all, we're going to have to make a lot of decisions. Let me go to Don. I know you have a very close family. What are your thoughts on, one, trick-or-treating? What are your thoughts on Thanksgiving and Christmas? How do you think men should be thinking about the holidays about now?
Thank you, David, and thanks for calling on me. It's a traditional situation where trick-or-treating was totally different from when you and I were kids growing up. But the world has changed so very much, man, and we have not got full grasp upon this pandemic and this COVID-19 and all these viruses right now. And we don't need to jeopardize people in a massive way like this for a piece of candy. In essence, that's what it really boils down to, a piece of candy. And it's a pagan holiday anyway. It's a real pagan holiday. So, I mean, it doesn't really faze me for trick-or-treating, but Thanksgiving, a totally different situation. That's when families virtually come together and try to celebrate each other. And that's where we need to make sure that we expound on the importance of taking the vaccine, whether it's Pfizer, Moderna, or Johnson & Johnson. We need to take the vaccine, families. Take the vaccine. I mean, it's not about you. It's about your family and your other ones that are suffering from a dreadful disease that can actually die. So it's a very crucial time during this fourth quarter, and we need to think first health for ourselves, health for our family, and for mankind, David. I hope I answered your question.
Yes. Let me ask, because you said something that I'm not sure everybody understands. You said Halloween is a pagan holiday. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Yeah. What is the purpose of Halloween? It's a pagan holiday where you go out and you celebrate spirits that I don't particularly agree with. And go from house to house, get candy and apples and so forth. It has no real meaning to me. Now, we celebrate it in our church where we would have students come together and we would have a party, not necessarily going to house to celebrate the devil or witches and goblins. You know, it means nothing to me. And that's my own personal feeling, and that's been the feeling that I have instilled in my children.
All right. There's another side of that story, too, because religion, you know, was very powerful in the world at one time. And then the Roman Catholic Church had a lot of power in the world, and it started celebrating Halloween because the Roman Catholic Church celebrates All Saints Day on the first of the next month, November 1st. And their idea was Halloween was to go around and get rid of, you had to pray and all that stuff on October 31st to get rid of all the goblins and everything so that you could have the saints who are in heaven. So you were trying to get rid of hell and bring heaven. So there are a lot of reasons for Halloween, and I don't think we all understand that it was really a religious holiday at one time. But anyway, Ron, what are your thoughts on men and celebrating holidays during this holiday season, especially Halloween and our families for Thanksgiving and Christmas?
Yeah, well, you know, Thanksgiving and Christmas, I think, are like Don said, you know, and Don, I agree with everything pretty much that you said. It's a time for families to get together. Halloween is totally different, and the way it's been celebrated here is masses, at least over here where I live, masses of kids, you know, pouring out into the streets and knocking on doors. And I mean, on one hand, I want to keep everybody safe, and you all know how I feel about COVID-19 and everybody getting vaccinated and all that. But to me, personally, it doesn't really make a lot of sense what the CDC said, that it's a high-risk activity. I could see how it's risky, but yet, you know, kids are going to school and you know, sitting with 30, 40, 50 other kids in one classroom and then, you know, going from classroom to classroom, if they're still doing that. I don't even know if they do that anymore, but you know, to me, that's riskier than being in a costume where, you know, you're outside, you're not going to go in anybody's house. So, and then we've got the packed stadiums, you know, and I know that these are older kids. These are, you know, I'm talking about high school and college, but they're still kids and they're still packing the stadiums next to each other with no masks. So I don't see how they made that statement, but I mean, I'm all for keeping everybody safe. I'm all for everybody getting vaccinated. I'm very upset at, you know, I respect, you know, if somebody's got a religious or, you know, a valid reason for not getting vaccinated, but for those that are, you know, following the conspiracy theories and all that out there, come on. You know, it's about time that they get vaccinated. And there's still way too many people in this country that aren't vaccinated. One more quick point, which is kind of scary. A friend of mine who is from England was telling me that, and remember, pretty much everything that happens in England happens here about 2 months later. She was telling me that right now they're in dire straits. Hospitals are full. They're having to send ambulances or having to travel 4 or 5 hours away to another town far away, and this is in London and outside of London, they don't have the capacity or the manpower to take care of sick people in the hospital. So, you know, it's time, you know, this pandemic is never going to go away until somehow we reach herd immunity or people get vaccinated.
Wow. All right. Soel, what are your thoughts on Halloween and Thanksgiving and Christmas, those thoughts about how men should think about protecting their families?
Well, I've only been trick-or-treating once in my entire life. So
Wow. When
it comes to Halloween, like, I really can't, like, see the appeal. I understand how it's important for young children and stuff like that. But, I mean, I don't celebrate Halloween. It's just a matter of, like, kids are going to be wearing stuff over their face anyway. So it's kind of like they have automatic protection from whatever germs or whatever it is that they're going to be interacting with, and you're just going to be knocking on people's doors and getting some candy. Some people get lazy and leave the whole thing out at night, and people just take the whole thing anyway. And Thanksgiving, I mean, last year me and my family had a big Thanksgiving. We had roughly about 70 to 100 plus people there. And we all did our part, made sure we had negative COVID tests. We wore masks around each other, which was really infuriating. So we all did our part to make sure that we weren't going to be infecting people, and we made a conscious effort to be safe. And Christmas, I guess we would just be around our immediate circle anyway, and things really wouldn't change all that much. But again, like, making sure you're not around people and, like, negative COVID tests, that will play a part into it in the future.
All right. Bruce, what are your thoughts?
Well, I would have liked to have heard, maybe not the CDC, but someone in a leadership position say, look, we understand, and I look at Halloween a little differently. I lean more towards what Ron said. Halloween for little kids, when we were little, was so, I mean, they looked forward to Halloween more than they did Christmas and every other holiday for the simple reason of getting candy and all of that. So it would have been nice to have leadership say, look, this can be dangerous. We understand that. We also understand how exciting and important it is for little kids. So if you feel you need to, do it, as I heard some of them say, do it like a lot of them are doing it now, in a controlled group in a school or people that you know or things like that. Don't just go out in a strange neighborhood and do your thing. Kind of use your common sense as guardians and family people to watch out for those kids, but let them enjoy that part of it. So that's what I would have liked to have heard. I didn't expect it. We didn't get it. It's always the negative. And the negative, I understand the concern about COVID. I'm just as concerned as anyone. But there's also, it can't always be bad weather. It's got to be some good weather involved in these dialogues too, if you know what I mean. So that's what I feel about Halloween. Do I practice it a lot? No. Do more and more adults that have kind of taken over Halloween practice it? Yes. And there again, as Sewell said, I would tend to, if I participated in any of that adult Halloween stuff, and it's not pagan, it's just having an adult party, is I would do it with known people, excuse me, and masks, and in a controlled environment. Just as an example, I went for the very first time last weekend to a concert of a very small, in a church, folk group, and probably 100, 150 people there. We were spread out. They asked, first time I've ever been asked, for my COVID card, and they wanted to know you were masked, and I felt totally comfortable, and that was fine. Thanksgiving, I also tend to agree that it's family. A lot of people feel like if they know everybody in their family, where they've been and so forth, they feel comfortable enough that they don't wear masks. I tend to do that unless it was such a large family. There's a number of people involved or in on that Thanksgiving gathering that you don't normally are around. So, but the small group, I think, most will feel comfortable to be unmasked. And it tends to be the same way with Christmas. I have one last thing on Christmas that's going to be a new element for me this year, so I'm kind of touching on all of them. I'm a conductor on our Polar Express train that is now going to run its excursions this Christmas. That's going to be in confined cars, and a trip to an outdoor place, but the confined space in the train. And we're already talking about a lot of safety measures where passengers will have to be masked, and the car host and everybody else involved will too. So I'm a little anxious about that last one, but I'm trying to see how we can do that in a very safe environment. All of that said means we have to start looking at the positive side of dealing with a very negative disease. If we keep people so confined and so restricted, they're going to get anxious and they're going to get angry and they're going to react instead of acting smartly.
Bruce, so you're saying that the train, which is going to have hundreds of people on it, is going to work and it's going to go to town of Ashley. It's going to drop people off into a town. And so isn't that against what you've been preaching all this time?
No, it's not against what I've been preaching. What I've been saying is that do I avoid certain confined spaces of unknowns? Yes, I do. So if you want to think of that as applied to the train as contradictory to what I've been saying, I guess you could say that. But am I willing to look at more and more openness or more and more situations where I feel comfortable enough of doing some of this, like the little concert I just went to? I haven't been to a concert in 2 years, but it wasn't really a concert. It was a folk gathering for folk music. But it was a new experience, and I went. I felt comfortable enough. I didn't feel uncomfortable enough to leave, and the space was there. So I'm saying is you have to personally then feel, is this comfortable enough for you? And do you feel all of the people involved is safe enough that you should do that or can do that yourself? So that's what I wrestle with a bit. But and if I, again, if I feel like it's not being comfortable enough for me to do it, then I may stop doing it. I may not do all the trips, but I'm right. willing to try it and see what's going on and see how we handle it.
You know, that is such a great experience for families and things. I would find that like everyone would want to go on that. But anyway, so Jeremiah, what are your thoughts on this discussion?
On Halloween, I haven't throughout my years in childhood, I haven't celebrated Halloween. Therefore, and my family as well, so it hasn't been something to do for us. I'm probably looking more towards Thanksgiving. And also, as far as my part, where I reside, I don't give out candy. I don't decorate my door. I don't do any of those things. It's not one of those holidays that I expect or look for. And that's about it for me.
One of the things I keep throwing in my mind, it's going to be very difficult for Thanksgiving, because Thanksgiving, if you have a mask on, how do you eat? And so that means everybody has to sit around the table and they'll be taking their mask off. So Spencer, what are your thoughts on this discussion, Halloween? Because I know you have a child that you're also taking care of, and Christmas and Thanksgiving. What are your thoughts on these?
Well, for Halloween, I think we're going to just keep it to the neighborhood that we're in. Everybody kind of does a good job here, you know, in our area, you know, as far as masking up and stuff like that. So we'll be with her, you know, go door to door. As far as Thanksgiving and Christmas, I usually travel for Thanksgiving, but for like last year, I'm not going to travel. I'll probably keep it in-house to couple family members and just have it that way. Same thing for Christmas also.
All right, Michael, what are your thoughts?
Hey, guys, good to be on the show again. Thanks for calling on me, David. I've always been anti-Halloween. I just don't understand what is the purpose of Halloween. I always saw it as just a money grab, another American money grab to get people to go out and spend money. And I just don't agree with getting candy from strangers or giving my kids or my loved ones candy from strangers, because there's some really crazy people in this world, and you don't know what they put in that candy. So I never really thought Halloween was a big deal to me. And in regards to COVID and Halloween, first let me just say that in regards to COVID, I wish we could stop making it such a political divide. Because as you all know, I just got over it. It's serious. It's not something to play with. I wish everyone would go get vaccinated. I just hate that it's politically divided, where if the left says get vaccinated, the right says don't get vaccinated. If the right says wear masks, the left say don't wear masks. I hate that the politics have come in and divided us in regards to COVID and in regards to a lot of other things in our country, but specifically in regards to COVID. I don't think politics should be there. I think it's something, as Americans, we should all come together and try to defeat this horrible virus that's killed 600,000 of us already. So in regards to just Halloween and COVID, I'm just like, I don't really care if the loved ones in my family go out and go trick-or-treating and things of that nature. It just really doesn't make any sense to me. And I would just suggest nobody go out and trick-or-treat during COVID, because it's just too dangerous right now, too dangerous times we live in. So I would be okay with suspending Halloween for another year, me myself.
You know, I gave this lots of thought, and I thought, if this was me and I had small kids, what would I do for Halloween? And I thought about it, and I said, how do I make it a positive? And so in my mind, I figured the only way for me to make this a positive would be to call them all and ask the mall, are they giving out candy like they usually do? Because what I find in the mall is you go around the mall, the person passing out candy comes out in the mall. They come out of the front door, and they put candy in the kid's bag, which I think is the safest way, because the mall would give out anything bad to kids. But then if the kids have on masks, if everybody in the mall have on masks, and you went, around the big circle, depending on how big the mall is, I would think that would be the safest way. My first thought is I probably would not do trick-or-treating if I had small kids at this point. But if I had to do it, that's probably the safest, quickest, easiest way for me to do it, and then take all the candy when I got back home and go through it myself, take out what wasn't wrapped or anything like that. But anyway, let's move on. I want to, Michael, what is on your mind? What would you like to talk about right now? Michael.
Was that question to me, David? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I would like to focus, talk more about what's going on with the refugees and what's going on with Haiti and how the immigrants were at the Del Rio border sleeping under the bridge, and now they're not under the bridge anymore, and how the horsemen were seen whipping those immigrants like slaves, and how they were talking to them. One of the guys on the horse said, oh, this is why your country is so horrible, because of the way you treat your women. So they were taking verbal shots at them as well as whipping them with those whips while they were riding on horses. And I think that's racism, because we see immigrants come in from all other countries every day in America, and never once have we seen white men on horses whipping them. So, and for the Biden administration to deport them back real quick like that, like, I was very upset about my party, the Democratic Party, by how they're treating it. But I'm going to say this, and I know it's going to make Bruce and Darius, if he's listening, happy. I agree with Trump on the border wall. I think we need a border wall down at the border to stop all these illegal immigrants from coming in with such a mass migration. And I do think it's political. I think it's just because Trump says build the wall, the liberals are saying no to the wall, no to the wall. Once again, something that's important to our country is divided between politics.
All right. Anybody got any thoughts on that?
Oh, yeah. I want to jump all over that. This is Bruce. About two-thirds of what you said, Michael, at the end there, I couldn't agree with you more. It's become, and I know that shocked you can pick yourself up as well, but you're exactly right. It's become so political that the left does it, the right won't. The right does it, the left won't. And they don't even care whether it's good for us standing out here watching this back and forth. So couldn't agree with you more on that. As for the what they say, also kind of applying a little of that on the whipping aspect. I looked at a lot of videos. I went on YouTube and all that kind of stuff to see if I could actually find the physical whipping that they said was going on. Were they using reins? Were they controlling the horse? Or some say it was controlling the horse. Some say they were lashing out at people. That's what I was searching for. And my last thought on that would be, if there was really a real example of the whipping of people, we would all agree that that's terrible, but yet the left would be the first to kind of bring that up front and center, make posters of it, have the video running over and over again, and I haven't seen one example of that. So I'm not saying anybody doesn't feel that it was or it wasn't. I'm just saying I couldn't find a viable example that actually showed the act of whipping people with the reins. That's all I'm saying on that.
Hey, Bruce. Yes,
Ron.
For all of you, this is under investigation. I don't think any, and so obviously, the truth is going to come out eventually. But I don't think anybody would disagree that the optics were horrible. Now, what's reality and what's not, that'll come out in the investigation. But the optics were horrible. But yet, I go back to the point that I made last weekend or the weekend before. We've got the Central Americans that we have that we've been dealing with, but now when it's the Haitians, it's kind of like completely different. And I want to know, because I heard this morning that I think they said 20% of them or something were sent back to Haiti. I mean, this whole thing is a fiasco. And I've always supported Biden, but, I know he inherited a huge problem, and immigration has never been right in this country, in my opinion, and lots of other people. But, who chooses, which people are sent back to Haiti and which ones stay? And, I mean, the whole thing is a disaster. And, Don, you're down here in South Florida, too, like I am, where there's a huge Haitian community, and they're not happy. I mean, I think it was Michael last weekend that said, it's probably due to race. I don't completely disagree. I mean, I think Bruce, you said, well, if that were the case, what about the brown people that are being, treated better? But I don't know. I'm skeptical about this whole thing.
Ron, I could not agree with you any more than 150%. It's a travesty of what's happening to the people of Haiti. Here's a situation where this country was once one of the richest countries in the world, overtaken by the French, stripped of its natural resources, diamonds, gold, silver. I mean, taken over like you wouldn't believe, and they still owe them money. Still owe the French government money after they ripped and raped the country. And the country has been facing hurricane after hurricane, earthquake after earthquake, calamity after calamity, people starving, people looking for homes and shelters, and they decide to live a better life and come to America. And all of a sudden, they hear you can't come in because of the color of your skin. And get on this airplane. We're going to take you back home to be persecuted. That's a terrible story. No other nationality in the world today coming to America has ever faced that. It's a terrible story. Terrible. They even got wet foot, dry foot. Where if you come from Cuba and you get on the water, you and your family, and sail to America and you make it, it's called dry foot. You can stay. But if you get caught without your toe touching the land, it's called wet foot. You got to go back home. We got some terrible laws in America that we need to address. What happened to the land of the free and the home of the brave? Well, what was good in Europe for European Americans years ago when they would come here, send me your tire and your wheat, and they would sail into America and be greeted by Miss Liberty? Well, Miss Liberty has not been kind to a lot of people, and we're going through some real changes in America. Get ready. To be continued.
Hey, you know, Don, I think that under... Oh, sorry.
Go ahead, Michael.
No, I was going to say, I'll be real quick. I think that what we saw with that, Don, is just underscoring the racism in America and how racist America is. Because a lot of that, those things you said, land of the free, home of the brave, send us your poor, all that, they never had black people in mind when they were saying that. They never considered African or black people when they were writing the rules of this country. So what we saw with those cases getting shipped out real quick, that was just a knee-jerk reaction by a bunch of white men saying, oh, no, we got to get those niggers out of here as quick as possible. And that's exactly what they did.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Let me get Jeremiah, who is down in Miami also, and I'm sure my ear now is buzzing with the Haitian community or buzzing what's going on. But I also want to bring out that, I don't know if many of you know, but it came out that in the little town Del Rio, Texas, many of the Haitian, somebody got something going on.
Yeah, okay. Someone stop washing the dishes.
Okay.
You can wash your hands, but not the dishes.
That's right.
Many of the Haitian migrants that were camped in Del Rio, Texas, it's a border town, they released them into the United States. Two of the congressmen said, and undercutting the Biden administration public statements that the thousands in the camp would face immediate expulsion. So somebody is doing right. Somebody went down into Del Rio, Texas, and opened the gates and let them into the United States. Jeremiah, what is going on? What are your thoughts on this subject? I know you're in the Miami area. I'm sure that you heard a lot about it. What are your thoughts?
I mean, I would say if those people that were stuck there at the around the border of Del Rio, Texas, if they're fortunate to be let into the United States, I'm glad for them. I'm not saying that, you know, there's a lot of nationalities or different countries that try to migrate to the United States and lose their life, suffer trying to come over here and have a better life for themselves, and probably most likely provide for their family back in their country. But I think it's a great deal if you know, everybody can come together because, you know, Haiti's one of the countries, just like everybody else, Cuba, just like, you know, everywhere else, Venezuela, Colombia, all the places that, you know, that need help, that we should reach our hand out to them and do better and show better and help. Because, you know, we, as well as the United States have a large, they have a lot of factories that we rely on in Haiti, that make clothing, that make different things. So, you know, we should do that gesture. But I saw that video. It was very displeasing. And there's a lot of people in that process at the border, which is horrible. We don't know if they've been held there for such a long time or it's just been that many people on a daily basis trying to come over. What do you guys think about that? Is it on a daily basis, you know, numbers that are coming over, or those people are being held there for months or weeks at a time and it became overwhelming?
Jeremiah, I'll comment on that. I tend to think at least that example, which is the most recent example, that grew so fast and disappeared so fast, was the figurehead example of what people were looking at. I think it illustrated a haphazard approach in doing it, not a logical approach. But we keep hearing too many times that one group or one side's against, the other's not, and they're this and they're that. But I always bring up, I'll bring it up again, what is wrong with a organized way of bringing in, embracing people? That's not less love. That's not hatred. That's more love. If you bring people in and do it in a logical, registered way because of COVID now and all those extra concerns, and not just release unknown factors of people with God knows what diseases into the country all over the place, that's not care. That's not love. That's ineptitude. That's not, that's being uncaring. because the people that are receiving these, the new people don't know what's going on, and the people that are being received by new communities don't know what's going on. It's a haphazardous, very dangerous way of not doing immigration in a logical, caring way. And it continues to go on that way. You saw under the bridge, guys, and then I'll shut up, how fast all those thousands of people disappeared. It was almost like they bulldozed the place. They took everybody out, bulldozed the place overseas. The problem's gone. Well, you and I can probably guess that a lot of those Haitians were mishandled in this way. They were put on buses. They were spread out all over the country. Now, they may have thought that was great, but they said, get them out of here. The visual is bad. And that's not a logical way to either help them or help the communities that are going to receive them. And that's the thing I keep getting frustrated with, as you can tell by my voice.
Gentlemen, I think I want to go to the next phase and listen, so you can listen to someone. Most of you are not aware, but our member, Spencer, is actually Haitian, and his family are from Haiti, and he still has family that he talks to in Miami and everything. So, Spencer, give us your idea on all the things that you heard today talked about. What are your thoughts, and how do you feel about what's going on?
Well, I'm really just appalled, you know. And when I first saw the news, I mean, for me, I was thinking, and also what I heard, I think it was Thursday or Friday, how in 11 days they had gotten like some like 4,000 or 4,000 or 5,000 out of 12,000 already out of the country in 11 days. You know, put them on the planes and sent them back. I'm like, wow, you know. And the first thing that hit me was like, oh, this is pure racism, you know. That's the only thing that I saw or read was, so they have us camped out and they get us out of the country real fast. But I feel like these other nationalities, when they come, you know, everything, they have them on a border wall. And I mean, they have them along the border. They process them. It's all this. They just don't ship them back as fast as the way they did these Haitians, you know? So a lot of people in the Haitian community that I know, my family, family that's over there, you know, they're upset, they're mad, they want to, with everything that's going on in the country, you know, they're trying to make a better life for themselves, and they wanted to do it here, you know, because they also have family and friends here. My sister is one of the ones that help out a lot of the Haitians, you know, when they come over here to get, if they apply for visas, they get them. She help them move, you know, where to go, stuff like that. So it's the infrastructure is here for us to help them, you know, with the people they know over here. And if they could put someone in place that understands them and that could just basically understand them, I think it could go a long way instead of just shipping them out and things of that nature. I was just appalled by how fast that they was able to do that, you know, in just 11 days, you know. But, yeah, that's really just how, you know, how I feel about it. It's just, to me, it's just to show that America is not for everybody or for every country. And I also feel like if a country doesn't have anything to offer, we don't offer them any type of help or aid to that degree of what we do for other countries. And I think Haiti is one of those type of countries that America feels like they don't offer us anything. So we're not just going to offer them as much, if any, aid or assistance. You know, I understand when there's big earthquakes and hurricanes, I think that's the most that we do. As far as everything else, I don't think we help them enough because their country itself doesn't offer us anything in return.
Spencer, you hit it right on the head. If America had something to gain financially, from taking in the Haitian people, they would be living next door to you and I right now. But see, they don't produce the diamond and the gold because they stole them. The people stole diamonds and gold from them, rich minerals, and they were supplying us with coffee. And even that isn't in demand anymore. But if it was full of oil, let me tell you something. They'd be living in your living room. Because America would make sure they have a place
to
stay.
That's what I was thinking. Let them would have had some oil. Oh, my gosh.
Oh,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and could I add something, too, as well? Don, are you done? I didn't mean to interrupt.
You go ahead, Bruce.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Okay. Spencer, from the standpoint of then, do you think most of the Haitians in that one example under the bridge there in Del Rio, do you think most of them were put on planes and sent back, or do you think a large portion, more or less, some percentage got put on buses and went into the interior of the United States just to get all of them out from under that bridge as quickly as possible? What do you think?
Well, I say about a quarter. Like I said, I know about 4,000 or 5,000 actually was deported, you know, back to Haiti. So that leaves about what 7,000, 6,000, something,
yeah,
like,
something
that.
Like
so,
that.
So some have made it in. So I'm not gonna say that some that nobody made it in. I know a lot has probably crossed over. Like I said, I know a couple people that have crossed over, you know, legally, you know, and stuff like that, but.
Right,
I'm pretty
right.
sure a lot of thousands of them have crossed over and gotten to the United States, while the other have just probably dispersed or somewhere else or getting ready to get deported back again. It was just the quickness that they were able to do that, you
right.
know, to dispatch them, you know, when you don't see it in a lot of other cultures. You know, it takes longer time, litigations, left and right, picketing and saying things, this and that. You know, it's a whole lot that's been going on when I think dealing with other cultures. But so like when it came to these particular people, group of people, they was able to handle it swiftly.
Why do you think then, I got one last quickie and then I'll shut up. Why do you think then, Spencer, that the current administration, since they do like to bring as many or as many people as they can of all races, of all countries as they can, why were they the ones to ship them out? It would seem to be counterproductive to what they've been thinking and trying to do.
I was thinking it could be a number of factors, you know. Maybe I don't think we're as smart or that we're as hardworking as other cultures, or just mainly because we're just black and they just don't want us here because they have enough. You know, it can be along the lines of we already have enough here, so why do we need more? We don't need more.
I want to get a younger mind. Soel, what are your thoughts on what we're talking about right now?
Well, with the immigrant thing with Texas and everything that's on the news, partially I agree that for people's safety, illegal immigrants should not come to the United States, and no matter how the process should be, they should wait, because if people come over here and they don't know how things work in America, people can get exploited. Like there was this story about immigrants that were working for $5 an hour because their bosses were exploiting them, and like, if you don't work for me for this crappy wage, I'm going to call ICE on you and have you deported. So it does work to their benefit to seek asylum, do it the legal way, and make sure that they can come over here and they will be afforded protection by the United States government. And, you know, they can also get benefits like health care if they need it or other kinds of resources that can be available to them. And like what happened with Haiti and the earthquake and like other various circumstances, there's been Venezuelan immigrants coming over here. Yes, the United States does help people. And it's just a matter of COVID and the whole crisis and everything, they want to make sure, well, are you vaccinated? Do you or do you not have COVID? Well, I don't think we can take you because there's no way to find out. So it really just varies depending on the person's beliefs and how we can progress and also take care of people.
What are your thoughts on that, Spencer? I guess not. Okay.
Don had something.
Yeah, you know, I think that it's politically motivated as well. This just not looking like a good picture for the Democratic Party. They were not prepared for such an episode like this. Politically speaking, it was a terrible narrative. That's why it was moved so quickly. That's why Biden had to move quickly, because it was a terrible narrative. Black people that had supported him, voted for him, were now under a bridge looking for water, food, and being persecuted from a country right off our shores. He had to move quickly. Politically, it was going to tear him up. So politics has played a major part in this thing, too. More so than humanity.
And you know what, guys? Don, speaking to someone, I was actually a Kamala Harris surrogate. Like, I was one of her strongest supporters. And I am very upset with her and this administration on what they did. And I'm even more upset with her from her reaction from this. Like, she should be far more forceful on her reaction to this, and she's not. She's not forceful at all. So I'm very upset with this administration over the way they're treating the Haitians.
I agree with you, Michael. And then her assistant is Haitian-American. And that even makes it worse.
Yes. Yes. Kareen,
I agree with you 100%.
Kareen LaPierre is her name, her assistant. And, yes, is a Haitian, yes.
And you know what, though, about this? Is that these are the same people that voted and supported Biden in the last election, Haitian Americans. And they present such a strong voting bloc in Miami and in the state of Florida. So this is going to be really detrimental politically as well, because they are not happy. I mean, Haitian Americans in the state of Florida are like the Chaldeans in Detroit, Michigan. They are very influential. They own businesses, and they have relatives that have a strong family loyalty. They're like the Jewish people when it comes to the family structure. Very tight.
All right.
Well, I agree with you, gentlemen, from a conservative point of view. Very much agree with what both of you just said.
Okay, we need to write that one down.
Yes, please do.
All right. Only about 15 minutes left, or 10 minutes, or 13 minutes left on the show anyway. But what I want to do is kind of end up on a positive note or something, but I am getting messages from the listeners, and there is one that wants to ask the panel a question. And I don't know if this question is going to take a lot of time, but just quickly give me your answers around the panel. I have a lady that's asking, they always have done Thanksgiving dinner for her husband's family and her family at their house. The husband's family refuses to get vaccinated, but her family has. So her husband still wants to do the Thanksgiving dinner at the house. So the question is, should she, she's asking, in our opinion, what should she do? I don't know the answer to that one. But anyway, what would you do, Bruce?
First thought, then I retracted it in my mind, was separate rooms or separate floors in the house. But no. I would say, you know, if they find out it's that much and it means that much to the spouse that has the family unvaccinated, and he or she doesn't want to start World War II, then find it kind of a neutral, maybe a restaurant, open air space, some way. I don't know where they live, where they could still accommodate the act of being together and be a much safer environment for all said.
With Clorox wipes and privacy glass.
What's that?
Who said that?
I was added with Clorox wipes and privacy glass.
Oh.
That's right. There you go. And big
right.
ventilation.
Spencer, what would you do?
I actually agree. You need to find an open space, you know what I'm saying, so everybody could be safe or feel safe. Or you might have to take that next step and do not go. Do not attend. Hold on to your values and your morals. Might cause some rift, but, you know, I think you should stand on what you believe in.
All right. Soel, what are your thoughts?
Sadly, the majority will overrule the minority, and if you're in the minority of the vaccinated or the unvaccinated or those who want to wear masks or don't, I'll quote from one of my relatives now passed, that's too damn bad.
Well, Ron, what are your thoughts?
I tend to agree with Bruce, you know, have it outside. I would definitely not have it indoors, and I would still be extra cautious outside, and you know, you could still get it outside. So, you know, physical distancing as much as possible. But my gut reaction was tell them to go to hell. And if they're not getting vaccinated, you ain't coming to my house.
No turkey, no giblets for you.
Yeah, no giblets for you.
God,
guys, also you gotta...
Don, are you breaking up?
We're losing Don.
Yeah. In the meantime, while Don is getting rehooked up, Michael, what are your thoughts?
Okay, can you hear me now?
Oh, yeah, there we go.
Yes, we can.
Okay. Hey, Ron, I agree with you, man. Don't come to my house. Go and get vaccinated first, and then we can talk. I agree with you 150%, brother. You know what, man? We have a choice to make in the world today. And I can't understand why this younger generation is making the choice to not get the vaccine based upon what they see on social media and what their friends say. I always ask them, where do you get your valid information? And then none of it seems to come from the medical opinion of medical people that have gone to school and dealt with this vaccine for years. It's almost like being your own doctor. And when you do that and be your own doctor, that means you got a fool for a patient.
All right.
Hey, Don, let me just add really quick. It's not only the younger generation. Maybe you're looking at the percentages, but there's some of the older generation. My brother knows a gentleman that just passed away, 85 years old, did not get the COVID shot. My brother did. And also, let me say, there are people out there maybe that don't believe or don't want to do it, but they're extra cautious. They'll probably stay home. They're taking their own sacrifices to not get the shot, and they're careful, and they probably do a lot of things that they should do right. So in some instances, there's a very small percentage, but there are people out there that haven't gotten a shot, but they're super-duper careful. And they might have another underlying illness that they don't want to affect because they have concerns. So let's not be so detrimental towards the people that don't get a shot, because there is a small percentage that we can't really, you know, pass judgment on as well. And
well, you know something, but you know something, though, brother, and I respect your opinion, and you're saying that they're busy analyzing and thinking and getting research, but there's a thing called a paralysis of over-analysis as well. And I think that's what's happening.
All right.
I agree.
Michael,
I agree, but they're entitled.
Oh, okay. Michael, what are your thoughts?
Michael?
Okay. I'm totally in agreement. They're entitled. I'm totally in agreement. Yeah, I can't do nothing but agree. I really don't have a lot to say other than I agree.
And just
remember, guys, Mr. Don was a total one for no vaccine, and look, now he's one of our biggest champions for the vaccine.
Oh, wow.
Exactly.
I'm
proud of you,
Don. Got delivered. Don, you got delivered, didn't you?
I got delivered.
I don't want to call you a hypocrite, but I'll just say you got delivered, you know?
Yeah, that's better.
I got delivered, and you know what? I realized I couldn't be a fool because, like I said, anytime you try to be your own doctor, you suffer from being a fool. Come on, you suffer from paralysis of overanalysis. I got to follow
okay,
the science.
Don, do me a favor. Let's be a little bit more light on those people that their view or their insight or now eyesight is congested, because at one point your eyesight was congested of the fact of getting that shot. So let's be a little softer on those people, please. You know, for the next coming weeks, next year you can go a little harder, but you're going a little too hard right now because you just got delivered a few weeks ago.
And you know what? The majority of the hospitals that I'm seeing that have COVID, they're all, I'd say 95% of the people have not been vaccinated, are now suffering in the hospital and dying.
I agree.
And also, Don, to what
but
he
that's
just
what
said
they call
to you.
It, die at your own risk. That's why you can die at your own risk. That's the beauty
yeah.
of it. I mean, I sound crazy, but that's the beauty of it.
Don, another aspect that you didn't mention, and I'd like to think it's there, you're surrounded by a support group that helped convince you that it was a good thing to do because they care about you. We won't mention names. Maybe a lot of the other people that are hesitant don't have that kind of support group around them.
Exactly.
That means they're leaning to their own understanding. And their own understanding is limited, Bruce.
Yep, and only they'll get there in their own way, just like you did.
Well,
and there's still a lot
amen.
Of misconception
amen.
Out there.
Amen.
Hallelujah.
I hear the choir.
No. You know, there's still a lot of misconception out there because I have a friend that refuses to get vaccinated, and he said that it's not approved by the FDA, that it's only emergency authorization. I said, are you kidding me? So I sent him the article that says, you know, it's been FDA approved, and he sent me back the finger, and then, you know, that was the end of the conversation.
But Ron, is he a true friend of yours or an enemy?
No.
Is he a friend?
No, not a good friend anymore.
Well, just keep positively poking at him, and sooner or later he'll realize Ron really wants to help me. He's worried about me.
It's just like sports, man. Guys are going to have some disagreements. He's still a good friend, you know. It's okay.
Yeah.
You know, in my opinion, the lady who's the wife should take a stand and say, no dinner at my house until your family gets, you know, everybody's vaccinated. That way she could say at the end of all this that she helped save her husband's family. But anyway, I don't know how the family works if she could be successful doing that. But anyway, that's my opinion. All right. I think it was a great show. I appreciate everyone who and so we'll be back again next week. We have to remember that we're getting ready to go into holidays, and we should keep thinking about our families and how we're going to make that work. Okay, guys, you guys have a great week. It was a great show. I appreciate all of you. We will all talk next week.
Have a great
Absolutely.
Week, guys. God bless. God bless.
We'll catch some sports next time.
Yeah.
Yeah, we will.
We didn't forget about you, Spencer. We gave you a day off, buddy. You got a day off, buddy.